What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to the show. It's David, Isaac, and Candace. We got great news tonight. The Los Angeles Lakers beat the Toronto Raptors 128-123. And that's what we're going to talk about because we do not want to discuss this Hawks game. Dear Lord, what was going on?
Yeah, man, I don't even know what to say. I mean, you go back to that loss at the Rockets and you're like, okay, well, for most of the year, they've avoided these type of games. Like in years past, we've seen that a lot. Like they do this a lot. And this year, they had pretty much cleaned that up. And then they go down to Houston and lose that game. You're like, okay, well, they got it out of the system. I think they'll be fine from here on. And you just kind of see some of these games, even the OKC game where OKC played hard, not taking anything away from them, but they kind of hung around that game. But you're thinking, okay, well, they know they got to finish these games out. You got a chance to move up 1.5 on the Warriors tonight. I mean, thinking about that Rockets loss, you still got that bad taste in your mouth. You think you come out and handle business, and they did not, man. It just came out flat. You could see Ja Morant, his energy wasn't at the normal level when the game first started. And I think the team kind of feeds off of him, and they just didn't have it tonight and never really got into a rhythm at all. It's only one point in the game where they actually looked like the Grizzlies, as they said on the broadcast, but I think you need to check IDs because I don't know who that team was out there on the floor tonight. The only time they really looked like themselves was kind of early in the third quarter. They kind of made a run, look like they might get back in it, but boy, just couldn't get stops, man. They made a couple shots, and the Hawks got back in rhythm and just ran away with it, man. They just could never get back in it, man. This is just tough to be in this position down the stretch, man. You want to see the team start to click on all cylinders, man, and this is a big step back. I think, if not the worst loss of the season, definitely one of the worst losses of the season, seeing the situation.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Isaac. That was my takeaway. And in fact, I got a reputation the past few podcasts as the eternal optimist. I am not optimistic today. In fact, I take it a step further. My biggest concern at this point is with the inconsistency. It looks more like the team that we saw the first 20 games. And the last time we saw the starting lineup together was that stretch. After that, we started having Dylan go down. We started having Ja go down. And my concern is will this starting lineup that we put in place, can they put it together? Can they become the team? Or does somebody have to be out of the lineup in order for this team to really be able to put it all together to where it's supposed to? I'm not making a conclusion about it, but it's a concern of mine because, you know, in the first 20 games of the season, there was a team that either dominated or they were dominated. There was no in between. And I think that's been the case since Dylan's got back. Either they dominated or they've been dominated. And it's too small of a sample size to really be able to make a real conclusion, but it's a creeping concern of mine that's in the pit of my stomach, and it makes me extremely nervous for any playoff hopes at this point.
This game was so bad tonight, we had to watch Kevin Knox play basketball. Like, Coach Jenkins was asked before the game, I don't know who asked the question, it was not a voice that I'm used to hearing, but the guy said, you know, since the last time I spoke to you, you guys are like, I think he said 32-19 or something of that nature. I can't remember what he said the record was, but, you know, pretty impressive. And he asked Jenkins what clicked, what happened. And Jenkins said the team, we were watching film, and he's like, we are better. We're better than this. And everybody, he gave credit to the players for taking responsibility and ownership of, you know, those first 20 games of the season. I guess I could do the math on that if I wanted to, but I don't feel like messing with that right now. You know, after the first 20 games of the season, you saw stuff start to meld on this team. Guys started playing better. You saw Ja buy in on the defensive end. Steven Adams had looked lost before that. And you saw him starting to buy in and things starting to click for him. And then now you get to games like this. And just like you said, Candace, they in that stretch, those first 20 games, they would come out some nights look like the best team in the league. And then they would come out the next night and lose to a team that they had no business losing to. It's super frustrating to watch kind of this roller coaster stuff. And this is not the time of the year to be going back, reverting back to where they were at.
I think what makes it most similar to the beginning of the year is because they were feast or famine in the beginning of the year. The defense was bad, and if they didn't have a game where they put points on the board. If they weren't making shots, they get blown out. And that's kind of what we're seeing now. The defense, no doubt, is taking a step back since the All-Star break. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the reason is, but the defense just hasn't been the same. And even in the games that they've won since the All-Star break, there's been things that I've saw that concerned me, but they win the games. They go back to that Magic game. They won big, and you just kind of fluff it off. But then when you see a game like tonight, you're like, some of these things that you're seeing, even though it resulted in a big loss tonight, these things aren't new. Like, point of attack defense hasn't been good. The perimeter defense hasn't been good for the most part. They took some steps forward a little bit in that Pacers game, but it's kind of hard to gauge anything out of that because the Pacers, seemingly, they've just quit. Like, that's basically what you see when you watch them. So it's hard to take a lot out of that. But point of attack defense has been a problem. It was a problem all night tonight. They just couldn't keep Bogdanović and Herter out of the paint, man. They were just driving and kicking and getting in the paint and just getting easy looks time and time again. Every time the Grizzlies would seem to make a little hay, they let them penetrate the paint, get a layup or kick out for a wide open jump shot. And we just saw that over and over tonight. They just couldn't get stops. I mean, you could even see them bearing down, like, okay, we got to get a stop this time. And it was the same thing. It was like a broken record over and over tonight. It was just driving me nuts. I was like, man, they're just never going to get a stop. And those aren't even guys that you would think that would get in the paint and kill you like that, man. But they just had a hard time keeping anybody in front of them tonight. And I hate to pile on Bane, man, but he was atrocious defensively tonight. Like, yeah, every time he gets screened, man, guys were just, I mean, it was just bad, man. It wasn't just him. The whole team was bad, but it was glaring with him tonight, man. And they just gotta get that cleaned up. They gotta get back to where they were prior to the All-Star break. And you have Dylan Brooks back, which is your best perimeter defender, and you think that would help. But right now, man, they're just not guarding. And that's a problem right now for this team. And tonight, the reason why they got blown out tonight, because not only were they not guarding, they also weren't knocking down shots. And similar, like you guys said at the beginning of the year, that's what we saw then. And that's kind of what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, this game was just dominated by Atlanta. Bane owned it in the post-game presser. He said, I don't feel like we came out with the right mindset tonight. And it was obvious. It was obvious early on in this game that they didn't have the right mindset. You look at pace of play, and the Grizzlies are among the top teams in the league. They average 94 shot attempts a game. They only got 86 in tonight. Yeah, that's not a huge difference. But when your pace slows down like that, we've discussed the half-court offense, and that's something Atlanta was able to slow this game down. They didn't turn the ball over. They made the Grizzlies play the way that they wanted to play, and the Grizzlies didn't impose their will, which is a little bit scary heading into the playoffs.
Yeah, and a big concern for me was just the offense too. The offense wasn't good. I mean, the amount of turnovers and time and the timing of the turnovers, as soon as they would make us a run, get it within 11 points or get something close, start to make a little bit of a run, we just have pointless or just, crazy looking turnovers to me. Ja had a few tonight. I mean, he had 6 turnovers tonight. And I thought that had a big deal to do with why they couldn't even get back in the game. They couldn't even make it competitive because of those turnovers.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say, Ja, I don't know what was going on with him tonight. He just didn't look focused. Like, you can see he usually has a certain poise, and you can just look on his face and tell that he wasn't locked in his game. And Candace said he had some bad ones, like, just, like, what are you doing type turnovers. Like, I didn't understand, like, throwing it right to guys. Like, I didn't get it, like, live ball turnovers where it was just bad tonight, man. I don't – there's, like, really nothing that you can take out of this game positive. I mean, the offense was bad. The defense was bad. They couldn't guard anybody. Couldn't guard the perimeter. Couldn't guard in the paint. They gave up offensive rebounds at bad times for second-chance points. I mean, they got killed in second-chance points, which is something that doesn't usually happen to them. They still won a rebounding battle, which they do that no matter what. Like, this – their rebound is legit. But, I mean, timely offensive rebounds tonight, and it hurt them time and time again. Capella was able to get positioning on Steven Adams, get offensive rebounds, and even their guards were rebounding the basketball, getting offensive rebounds. It's just bad, man. Death by DeLon Wright, man. That's not what you want to hear.
The rebounding battle, they didn't take that over until late. The Hawks led this. They led the game in rebounding for the biggest part of this game, and that's they kind of out-grizzlied the Grizzlies tonight. I mean, that's really what it breaks down to. You look at what do the Grizzlies do? They force turnovers, they get out and run. And, you know, the Hawks, you can't say with 12 fast break points from the Hawks that they really got out and ran, but they forced a bunch of turnovers. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you have to take care of the ball. And when your star, when the best player on the team is not locked in, and I think that it's safe to say, you know, multiple people, I think, would agree with us that he was not locked in tonight with those six turnovers. You've got to find a way to get it done. And nobody was stepping up tonight. It just wasn't happening from anywhere.
Yeah, there was a very distinct moment, and I'm not sure the exact – you guys may have to help me out on the timing if you remember, but there was one of our last timeouts probably around the 7-8 minute mark. I think we started to make a little bit of a run, and Atlanta called a timeout because we had
a little bit of hit that three. Yeah.
And they hit that three, yep. And they turned the camera on John Morant coming out of the timeout, and he just looked – he had this look in his eye almost just like the defeat. I just saw it all on his face. I mean, it was still – could have been kind of a game. I'm not saying they would have won away with it with 7 minutes left in the game, but it was still a chance if they fought hard. But I looked at his face at that moment, and I said, they have no chance. I mean, that rarely happens, and I can look, you know, just by the look on the player's face. But it was just that obvious for him. He was not there. I don't know where his head was, but it was not on the game.
Yeah, the body language wasn't good at all from
– yep.
Really anybody tonight. Like, they just, you hate to say that they just didn't seem to care, but it was like, even when they were getting beat, they didn't seem like you think you'd be upset. Like, you're a team that's fighting for the second seed. You're going against a Hawks team that's a solid team, but they're missing their best two players. They're the 10th seed in the East, and you get your ass kicked, and you think you'd be upset, and they just didn't seem to, I don't know, there was no emotion there. They all seen emotions, like just kind of going through the motions. Like, the only time you ever saw any spirit was the early in that third quarter. They said on the broadcast that they had talked to T. Morant, John's dad, at halftime. He was talking about the crowd was – when John went to the free throw line in the first half, they were yelling – the crowd was screaming overrated. And he said that John heard him and was kind of upset about that. And I felt in the third quarter, I was like, man, he's going to try to go off. And he tried for that first 4 or 5 minutes of the third quarter. And then after that, it just – kind of went back to the same thing that it was before. And I don't know if he was hurt, like the back thing. I don't know if that's something for real. Like, I kind of thought it was just kind of something they were saying to kind of rest him, but I don't know if there's a real thing. And now you're dealing with the knee issue. Hopefully that's not anything serious. Taylor Jenkins said after the game that John just said he had a little soreness in it, and they took him out. He just went and got looked at. They'll have an update. No real update now. They have an update prior to the game on Sunday. You hope that's not anything serious, because that's just not what you want right now, man. We're coming down the stretch, and you never want to see anybody get hurt, but you have the situation in Golden State with Steph going down. He's probably out into the playoffs. You have a golden opportunity here to throw up that two seed, man. You could have went up a game and a half and really started to make that push tonight and just didn't get it done, man. You just hate to see it. And again, that's why I feel like this is probably, to me, worse than a Rockets game because of the situation you're in. I mean, you had already lost that one, and you feel like, okay, man, we got that one behind us. We're not going to do that again and come back out and do this again. And you could have had a chance to go up game and a half. It's just a bad loss. And you can't, as Brevin said, when me and David talk about this all the time, can't cheat the game. Just because you look across and don't see Trae Young and don't see John Collins, that don't mean that these are not NBA guys. You don't have to come out and play hard. If you're going to be an elite team, come out and be elite every night. That's what you see from teams like Phoenix. Phoenix doesn't take anybody for granted. They come out and play the same type of game 99.9% of the time, no matter who they're playing against. And that's what you have to do. You have to have that killer instinct. I don't care who you're going against. And they just didn't have that tonight. And this is the second time in about a week and a half that we're saying this. And it's just not the time for to do this. This is the kind of stuff that you kind of work through at the beginning of the season. You don't want to see this with 12 games left in the season, man. It's just not a good spot when you're jockeying for position, man. You can't lose these type of games. And again, this is the second time in a short while that we're saying this.
I'm going to be the optimist here. The points that you were just making are fantastic. This is the second youngest team in the league, and I'm not using that as an excuse for tonight's game, but that's the difference, I would say, between the Phoenix Suns and this team. Devin Booker, Chris Paul, those guys have been in the league. They've been in the league for a while, and they know that you cannot do that. And I'm not implying that the Grizzlies don't know that. I think that they do, but I think that comes with maturity. I think as these guys, you know, as this team gets older, as we see Ja, you know, year four, five, six, and Jaren, as we see this team start to age, and I don't mean that in a bad way, obviously, but like you see, I think the maturity level is going to grow, and you're going to see these guys not have games like this. But I'm not an excuse guy. I've never been an excuse guy. You can't come out at this point in the season and play a game like this. But to overlook the fact that they are the second youngest team in the league in a situation like this, I think would be doing a disservice, honestly.
Yeah. I do understand they're a young team, and we keep that in mind. But if your goal as a team at this point is to play above your age, which is what they've been doing. They've been out to prove a point. They haven't been taken seriously because they're a young team, and so that's been a chip on their shoulder all season. When you fall or you make mistakes, I'm not sure that could be the same crutch, especially if you're if that's your number one of their main driving points, you know, on the season. I do hear you. I'm just not sure if given the position that this team is in, and given the fact that we all talk about it all the time, I mean, they're young players, but they're older young players. They have a veteran type of mindset, and so I think you still hold them to the same standard, whether they win or lose.
I don't want to make any assumptions off of one game or make any quick judgment, but I want to get you guys' thoughts on this. And I saw a lot of people throughout the game tonight on Twitter and social media talking about this. Does anything that you see tonight with Dylan Brooks give you pause to where you say, well, maybe it would be better to bring him off the bench? I saw a lot of people talking about that tonight, and I'm going to wait to give my opinion. I want to see what you guys think about that.
David, I'll let you start.
Okay. All right. It didn't matter to me who went first, but absolutely not. No, there's nothing. There were plays in the first half. You and I kind of talked about it. You know, we were messaging back and forth. There were some plays that he made that you were like, okay, that was a terrible, bad decision. Yeah,
old Dylan Brooks. Bad Dylan Brooks.
But it's easy to point out, right, because of his history with that type of thing. But it was from everybody tonight. It was not just Dylan Brooks being selfish and not playing team basketball. The total assists for the team, 18 assists to 17 turnovers. You're not going to win many games whenever you play like that. This team thrives when they move the basketball, when they share the basketball. This team thrives. They didn't do that tonight. They were not able to get out and run. There were a lot of things that contributed to this loss. You know, we could sit here and hammer on it all night long. We can talk about the 17 for 23 from the free throw line. I definitely want to discuss that a little bit later on, you know, after we get past this point. But there's nothing – I feel like I've said this on the show before, but Dylan Brooks is your best point of attack defender, without a doubt. I'm not even listening to an argument for anybody else on this team because of the versatility, because of his size. He can guard – from 1 to 3, and you could even match him up against some fours, but you know, a four is not really going to be a point of attack guy. But 1 to 3, if you have a point of attack guy, Dylan Brooks is your defender, hands down, no doubt about it. And there's nothing that happened tonight that makes me want to move him out of the starting lineup.
Yeah, I'm torn because I don't think that it was a Dylan. I agree with you, David. I don't think it was a Dylan selfish ball type of thing. And it might just be simply Dylan getting sort of his feet under him. He hasn't played. He's only played 21 games this season. Well, it's been more than now, but he, you know, before his turn, he only played 21 games this season. And so I was surprised to see that his plus minus was 2. He was one of the only positive players on this team outside of the back end of the bench. I was surprised to see that just because I felt like there were several moments, like you guys alluded to, that there was a momentum shift, and then Dylan would do something and it sort of shift the momentum back down, and then a wave of bad things would happen. Now, that could be coincidence. It could, like I said, just be getting his feet under him. But it goes back to my concern about the last time you saw this starting lineup together and whole, it was inconsistent. And we thought that that was just because it was the beginning of the season. But if this trend continues, it will make me question a little bit. And I don't know if it will be just because Dylan can't pass the ball. It may be other things, and I can't specifically identify them yet. I'll continue to evaluate as we watch these games. But, you know, Dylan took 13 shots tonight. Job had 23 shots up tonight. Bain had 14 shots. Jaren Jackson still got 10. So I don't think it was an uneven disparity in terms of attempts, but yet the defense that he brought, statistically, I guess it shows better, but I just think he had quite a few momentum killers, and maybe that was just too much for the team, especially when you got a small margin of error and you're down double digits. It just sort of snowballs what's already wrong, I think.
Isaac, before you take off, I've got to mention, you mentioned Jaren only taking 10 shots. And I saw a couple people talking about Jaren shot attempts. There's a couple things that you have to look at whenever you're talking about Jaren shot attempts. If Danilo Gallinari is guarding him, it's barbecue chicken all day long. But this Hawks team has two guys, and one specifically, that is a pretty tough matchup for Jaren and Onyeka Okongwu. He's, you know, I think Okongwu's like 6'8 or 6'9, but he plays significantly bigger, and he's got the foot speed to really be able to keep up with Jaren. And I don't have the stats in front of me to tell you, oh, Jaren was this versus Okongwu tonight, but the Hawks are a tough matchup for Jaren. And so the fact that he only got 10 shots up was probably very matchup dependent. I don't think you can't say that the 13 shots from Dylan Brooks are really what. Okay, if you take – Dylan's going to get that many shots every single game. He's going to shoot between 12 to 15 shots every single game. The Grizzlies didn't play at their normal pace, and so that takes a few shots away from guys. Unfortunately, tonight, it just so happened to be Jaren Jackson Jr.
Yeah, and to go back to Dylan, I'm kind of with Candace. I do have some concerns because – when we saw this matchup on the floor, it seems like when the Grizzlies have played their best basketball is when there have been people out. As weird as that is, that's just kind of been the case. And when we saw this lineup for the most part early in the season, they struggled. And you kind of see what's going on now. And I've been 100% pro. We talked about Dylan coming back. I was 100%. Put him back in the starting lineup. He's going to be your starter. You need your best perimeter defender to start the game when you get into the playoffs, blah, blah, blah. I was 100% for that. But I think I saw some things tonight, like you said. I saw some ill-advised shots. I'm with Candace. I was surprised when I looked at the box score and saw he was a plus two. I was like, that's interesting. That kind of goes back to my thoughts on plus minus, that it doesn't always tell the real tale. And you saw some bad shots and some momentum killing plays from him tonight, but it was so bad that it's kind of hard to kind of single him out because it was just such a mess that some of those bad shots, I mean, nobody was scoring. So he's like, man, I'm just going to put a shot up, man. We can't hit anything. So I'm just going to put a shot up. It's kind of hard to key him out. So I think I need a bigger sample size. But some people were talking on Twitter, and they were bringing the point up with him taking more shots, to take shots away from other guys, and that when Zaire Williams in the starting lineup, he doesn't really do that. And if he comes off the bench, it might be more beneficial because he can get more shots up with an offense because they'll need his offense on their second unit. And that's an interesting point. I'm not ready to say that I think he should be out of the starting lineup yet. I mean, because this night was just such a mess that I don't want to make any knee-jerk reactions off of what I saw tonight, because I just think it was so bad that everybody was bad. So, I mean, keep singling them out is not much. I don't think this is the game to kind of make the determination. But I'll be watching to see how this continues to play out. But, again, when they've had this full lineup, they play better when they haven't had their full lineup. For the most part. Now, we've had a small sample size of this. That's why I need to see more. And you hate to kind of be in this spot trying to figure these things out with like 12 games left to play going to the playoffs. But, I mean, that's kind of where they are right now. I mean, you got to find out how to integrate Dylan back in. I still think in the long term, it's better for this team if he's in the starting lineup, especially on the defensive end. I think you need that. But it's definitely something I'll be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, and I think it looks different. It may be one of those things where it looks different in the regular season than it does in the playoffs. Dylan might need to may be a starter in the playoffs because of the half-court offense and perimeter defense he can bring. But some, for whatever reason, the flow in the regular season, just because of how things are played, it doesn't work out. And I want to see if I can find this stat or continue to track this stat, but and it may just be this game. But it just seemed like if there was anything I could point to with Dylan, it was that the fouls that he made tended to lead to points for the other team, like almost like automatically, like the flagrant foul, for example, or just the and one opportunities or just things like that. I just felt like it wasn't just the foul, it was a foul and it gave the other team momentum because of it. And I'll continue to track that. I don't know if that's a stat that they track fouls of foul, you know, points that, I mean, fouls that lead to points or whatever, but it's something I'll watch. If anything that I could point to, I think it would be that over the shot selection in general for me, because Dylan wasn't the only one taking bad shots today.
So I've got to go back to a point that Isaac made, and Dylan taking shots away from other guys. All right, Dylan returned. His first game back was against OKC, right? Mm-hmm. So if you go back to that OKC game, when Dylan returned, Desmond Bain, 15 shots. Jaren Jackson Jr., 13 shots. Ja Morant, 14 shots. You go to the next game, you go to the Pacers game. Desmond Bain, 12 shots. Jaren Jackson Jr., 16. And Ja was out in that game. And then you look at tonight's game and what these guys done. I say all of this, Ja averages 20 attempts a game. Bain averages 15. Jaren averages 13. You look at tonight's box score, Ja had 23. Bain had 14. Jaren was the only one that was really under where he should have been. Jaren only played 23 minutes tonight. Jaren normally plays more than that. If Jaren plays closer to 30 minutes, there's no doubt in my mind that he gets four more shot attempts up. Who is Dylan taking those shot attempts away from? He's taking them away from guys that you want him to take it away from. Would you rather have Brandon Clark, De'Anthony Melton, Tyus Jones, Xavier Tillman, John Conchar, Jarrett Colville? There's nobody on this team. You got Ja Morant, Desmond Bain, Jaren Jackson Jr. After that, and maybe you could argue Dylan before one of those guys, but who's he taking them from? Like, I get being concerned and I just feel like that argument is busted. I think that it's trash. When you have a starting caliber player that is a guy that can go out and get buckets, he's going to take shots. He's not taking shots away from Ja Morant. He's not taking shots away from Bain. He's not taking shots away from Jaren. We're three games into this, and we were without Ja for one of them. But in the games that they've played, he's not taking shots away from them. You look at the one game that he played with Ja in OKC, Ja did take fewer shots. But Ja was also distributing the ball at an extremely high level that night. I can't remember how many assists he had, but he was moving the ball, and that was a very spread out, like, team-friendly game where, like, everybody was eating. And for me, there's no weight to that argument at all, because the people that he is taking these shots away from are people that he should be taking these shots away from.
Yeah. But to your point, Zaire had one shot tonight. So that's exactly to your point. Yeah, I think you're right about that.
And when you say taking shots away, maybe that's not the right word. Maybe not taking shots away, but the offense might not flow as well. I think it's a better way. It's a better way to put it, because Dylan, lots of times he'll dribble a lot and run a lot of clock in the offense. When Zaire's out there, Zaire is not going to be – he's not going to have the ball. He's not going to take any time up off the clock, and people are moving the ball around. A lot of people – and I'm not necessarily saying I agree with this. This is just kind of the chatter around it, that Dylan can be kind of a black hole. Like, even if he doesn't take the shot, he might dribble around and, like, force somebody else to have to take a bad shot. It's more about the flow of the offense, I think, than him actually taking shots away from guys. I think that's kind of the point that the people that feel like that would make, that him being out there instead of Zaire Williams kind of can bog the offense down at times. Not that he always does it, but I think sometimes people feel like with him out there, they don't get as good a shot, so they get bad shots later in the shot clock because he's out there trying to create and do different things. I think that's kind of the difference. His usage is definitely higher than Zaire's. A lot of people feel like that kind of kills the offense.
And the competition does matter, but I would say the first two games, I don't think that was an issue. But today, I think that was a real – that's a legitimate point, especially for today's game now. It's a small sample size. We're talking about three games. So
it's a bad game. So, yeah, you don't want to take anything away, because, I mean, it was so bad that everybody
right
is everybody was taking bad shots. Yeah, right. So again, I just want to, I need to see a bigger sample size and see how this plays out, or what they have 12 games left, how this plays out later in the season. And again, this is not necessarily my feeling. This is just kind of the concerns that I've heard from some Grizz fans and kind of discussing this on Twitter. We'll see how it plays out, because I think Dillon needs to be in the starting lineup. He's your best perimeter defender, point of attack defender. There's no doubt about that. And you have to have that when you're going against these elite teams. And you're going to need a stopper out there. And he's the best guy they can have to throw out on your best wing player. So you need him out there. And he's going to make shots. I mean, he struggled a little bit, but he's getting back in rhythm. Eventually, he's going to knock down those shots. But I guess now that he's not making a lot of shots, it kind of looks worse than I think it'll look at once he gets back in rhythm.
Yeah, I'm with you. My hope is that ultimately, as he plays more games and gets acclimated with the team, that we'll see an improvement, and a consistent improvement, not just an improvement from one game. That's my hope.
And I have to say, I think that, you know, the way changing the wording, he's definitely going to be a higher usage guy than Zaire. Yeah. He's going to handle the ball more than Zaire was handling it. And so in that aspect of it, would I rather have the ball in Ja's hands or Dillon's hands? You all know I don't have to answer that question. You know the answer to that question. So on that side of it, I can definitely see it. But the taking shots away, I don't agree with that at all. But I do think, you know, the overall usage and the amount of time that he's going to have the ball in his hands, as opposed to what Zaire would have, could definitely make an impact on the game. So I want to, you know, I said I want to talk about the free throw shooting. 17 for 23 tonight for 74%. And this is something we've kind of had this conversation before, but I done a little digging today. I was sitting here, I was watching the tournament, and my daughter had passed out. And I don't know why. I guess free throws are just in my head. They just stick. So I was like, man, this man only
free throws.
So since the All-Star break, the Grizzlies are 29th in the league. They're shooting 71.4% from the free throw line. We talk about Steven Adams. We talk about his impact on that. How much of an impact does he have? Steven Adams, since the break, has gone 13 for 26 for 50% from the free throw line. That's obviously going to drag the free throw percentage down. If you remove Steven Adams' attempts from the team, it only raises them up to 73.9%.
Yeah, it's definitely not just him. That's definitely not the case.
So, yeah, like you get an improvement. Like that's 3% almost. But you move from 29th to 27th. This is just a bad free throw shooting team in general. It's not just Adams. And that's I want to see – I think that's an off-season thing. I think at this point in the season that we're not going to see the improvement that we hope to see from the line. I hope that, you know, in the off-season, that's something that they take seriously and they go in and they put some work in and we see them improve from there.
I wonder what – I'd like to look this up. I don't have – do you know what that number was last year? That'd be an interesting number to see. I know you talking with Steven Adams and the difference between – JV, because JV was a good free throw shooter. But the thing about it is that this is a bad free throw shooting team, because a lot of it is your guards. And that's something that you don't see. Ja Morant is inconsistent. Desmond Bane has been extremely inconsistent. I mean, not Desmond Bane, but De'Anthony Melton has been extremely inconsistent from line. No, not Bane. Kyle Anderson has been bad. And those are the guys that you usually don't worry about. Your bigs are usually on most teams the ones that bring your free throw shooting down. So I'd be interested to see what that number was last year, just kind of the Steven Adams versus JV comparison. But
77% is what
they were a little bit better. Say,
yeah, 77.1 with JV. And JV, I think, is like a mid-70s guy from the free throw line. So, like, that's something he's going to be – the amount of free throws he gets and the percentage he shoots it at, he's going to be a positive. But, you know, it's still a drop.
Yeah, that's still a pretty – because you say Steven Adams only affects it 2%, so that's still a drop from last year. So that means guys have regressed definitely from what their numbers were last year. Because, I mean, you have basically the same roster. I know Desmond Bane. Dillon has been out for a while, and he's one of your better free throw shooters. So I think with him adding it, that would probably raise that number a little bit. But, man, your guard's got to be better, man. You can't have your point guard, as much as he gets to the line, He's got to get that number up to at least 80%. I mean, that's just has to happen, man, because he's going to lose games because he's going to be at free throw line late in games, man. He has to knock those free throws down. If you're not, man, you're going to end up losing games because of that. Superstar player, man. When you get to the line, you got to knock them down.
Yeah, I would say to my eye, in terms of just the biggest drop-off I think I've seen in free throw shooting, Ja's streaky, but I think Ja's been streaky for some time.
Yeah, he's been kind of streaky.
Yeah, but Kyle Anderson and De'Anthony Melton, I think those would be the two that De'Anthony Melton used to be a good free throw.
Yeah, shooter. I don't know just what's going on with him, man. Yeah.
And he just can't seem to get that right. And Kyle Anderson, you know, with that hitch in his shoulder, I just don't know. I mean, I'm surprised he was 3 or 4 today. So that was actually a bit of a surprise to me, which just goes to show you when he makes most of his free throws, it surprised me. So he generally does not. I think that's a big part of the regression to my eye.
Yeah, this got off subject. We talk about that hitch in his shoulder, and we saw his shoot numbers and how good he was last year. And me and they were both in the preseason media availability, and it kind of stood out to me at that time, and I mentioned it. He just randomly in his media availability mentioned the shoulder and said, well, this is probably something I'm going to be dealing with all year. And he didn't say anything like that last year. So I said then, I was like, I wonder, is this something that's flared back up? Because he hadn't even mentioned the shoulder in about a year. Nobody asked him about it or anything. He just randomly, before his media availability ended, said, oh, well, this shoulder thing, this is probably just a pain tolerance thing. I'm going to be dealing with this all year. It's never going to be right. And that stood out with me. And I think we've seen throughout the year that it's definitely been a problem. I think it had cleared up last year, and you saw his three-point numbers, career highs across the board in shooting, and he's definitely regressed in all those numbers this year.
Yep.
So your eyes are not deceiving you. I was digging for stats. Sorry if you heard the pen clicking in the microphone. Kyle Anderson last season was 78% from the free throw line. This season he's 60%. De'Anthony Melton last season shot 80% from the free throw line. He's 72%. Yeah. Jaren Jackson, 84% last year. This season, 80%. 80% is still good, but it's a 4% drop. Yeah. You got an 8% drop from Melton and an 18% drop from Kyle Anderson.
Yeah.
They missed. The Grizzlies completely whiffed. I will say that you can maybe argue the Justice Winslow thing, but I would say that this is probably the biggest miss that this front office has had in the sell high window on Kyle Anderson.
Yeah, they missed that one for sure.
Should have traded him in the offseason, should have got some assets for him. There's no doubt in my mind after the season that he had last year and what he proved last season that he can do it. And I don't get me wrong, I love Kyle Anderson. He definitely can impact. He makes winning plays on both ends of the floor. But you got a career best out of him last year, and I don't know that you'll see him back at that level, especially with this shoulder thing.
Yeah, with him knocking down shots the way in threes, the way he was shooting last year, to add in everything else that he brings, the tangibles, rebound, the rebounding, the defense that he plays, just makes smart plays. There was a contending team that definitely would have given you something for him at the deadline. There was even some thought that you might be able to get a late first for him at that time. I don't know if that was the case or not, or that was real, but there were a lot of people that thought that, and they missed that, man. And I'm a big, big-time Kyle Anderson fan, like bigger than most. Like when people were talking about moving him or should they bring him back, I was like, man, they should definitely bring him back. They should extend him. But definitely I think they had an opportunity last offseason, and I think this front office has done a lot of good. Like they haven't missed much, but I think that's one of the things that you kind of look back on and say, man, they probably should have made that move at the deadline last year.
Yeah.
You know, he made 94 threes last year, and he's made 204 in his career. So almost 50% of his total three points made came in one season, which was last year. His points per game were a career high. His assists were a career high. His rebounds were a career high. And that is something I know that they value Kyle Anderson. Don't blame them for valuing Kyle Anderson. We see what he's able to do, but if they don't re-sign him, and it's a possibility that could happen that they do re-sign him, if they don't, it's a miss. That is far and away the biggest miss that they've had so far.
Yeah, I'd agree. And just one last point I'd want to make in terms of just the overall big picture for this team before we wrap up here. I just noticed it caught me off guard. I just noticed that we actually shot 36.4% from three today, which I didn't expect. They were 8 of 22. So this is one of those losses where we actually shot over 35%. And we can now put three in that L column, which I think makes this win probably even more just discouraging overall, and hopefully something they can bounce back from moving forward, because it does address some other issues that they need to work on going as we go down here as we go down the stretch.
Man, I don't really have anything else on this game. I don't think I ever gave the final score. The final score of the game, 120-105. Atlanta beats the Grizzlies. They fall 48-23. The Grizzlies are still in second place in the West by a half game over the Golden State Warriors. Steph Curry going down is huge news for the Grizzlies, but they have to execute. You have to go out. You're favored in this game. You've got to win games like this. Their next game is a rematch against the Rockets in Houston on Sunday.
Must win. Got to win it.
You cannot. We don't know where Ja Morant is going to be. We don't know if he's going to be out, if he's going to play. Regardless of if he is there or not,
still got to win.
This team
gotta
is
win,
better
gotta win. Gotta
without
win well.
Ja Morant than that team is in a landslide. You have to win that game, and it's crazy. You're saying this is a must-win game, but it is. You do not. You would much rather play one of those play-in teams than face the Denver Nuggets. That's just there. There's no two ways about it. You know, Minnesota's playing insanely well right now, and there's a good chance that Minnesota moves up into that sixth seed and you end up playing the Nuggets anyway. But that the second round home court advantage is going to matter if the Grizzlies make it that far. This half court offense, I don't know. I'm a little worried about that. I've mentioned it before. I won't be on it again tonight. But Isaac, do you have anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up, man?
Yeah, real quick, I want to go back to Candace talking about the three-point shooting. Grizzlies, though, 8 of 22 for 36.4%. The problem is the Hawks went 13 of 28 for 46.4%. Yeah. And so that's a 5-3 advantage, so that's 15 points, and you lose the game by 15 points. So that's kind of – you can kind of look at that like that's kind of in a nutshell, man. You lose the three-point line by 15 points, and you go down by 15 points. So
That makes sense. That's a good point.
Yeah, it's – just brutal. Just a brutal loss tonight. That's
yeah. I mean, there's nothing else to say.
No excuses. Yeah. There's nothing.
Need them to win convincingly. I don't just need them to win. I need them to win and put together, you know, a real complete full 48 minutes. We need to see that from this team so they can get some momentum as they go down here in this home stretch and they'll face some tough teams. The time put together is now. There's no more time to play around.
You got Brooklyn on Wednesday and then – Milwaukee on Saturday next week,
and the Warriors.
The Warriors at home on Monday the following week. If they mess around and play like they did tonight against the Hawks, they're liable to get blown out by 40 against those teams.
100%.
You cannot go into those games lightly. Kyrie is going to be able to play for the Nets whenever they come to Memphis because Memphis doesn't have the same restrictions that they have in New York City. So. That's going to be a fully healthy Nets team coming in against, you know, you just, there's too many tough games coming up for them to be in this kind of funk. Hopefully they can go to Houston, figure out what was going on. The NBA TV guys were poking fun and they're like, oh, they got a wing hangover. You know, they were out eating wings and they're just waiting on their food to digest. And so that's why they're not playing well. You know, it's
2 days off in Atlanta, man. You know that's what they say.
Yeah. What'd you call it? The Lou Will special?
Yeah, Lou Will special, man. Yeah.
Went down there. Let the lemon pepper get the best of them. Man. Dang it. All right. Well, we will wrap it up. We appreciate you guys tuning in. Go and find the show on Twitter at Ethos Grizzlies. I am at DavidW2111. Candace, let them know where they can find you, and then Isaac will get us out of here.
All right, you can find me on Twitter at Seahawks901. That's C as in cat, Hawks901. Take it away, Isaac.
Yeah, man, you really, really hope Ja is able to go, man. And I'm with you guys. I hope they get a convincing victory on Sunday afternoon against the Rockets because they got ESPN coming here, full assets all day. All their shows are going to be here, capped off by the Grizzlies' Nets game on ESPN on Wednesday night. So you need some momentum going into that game, and you hope Ja's able to play, man. That would be tough, man, if he ends up missing that game and he's not able to play when you have all that going on. So outside of that, man, it's just need a big victory on Sunday and then go into a tough three-game stretch and see what happens. But you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_Rivals. That's ISAAC_Rivals. Again, we'll be back next week with post-game, and that's going to be a fun time on Wednesday, man. I'm sure Grizz Nation, that's crazy to see this where we are right now, man. Never thought I'd see anything like that where ESPN would have a Memphis Grizzlies day where there's like all assets, everything Memphis Grizzlies. So that's going to be fun to see. So make sure you guys check that out. And we'll be back next week. So until then, we go.